Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Imagine if you could pivot and relaunch a new career anytime you wanted. Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here, helping you to get 1% better each and every day. And today we're going to learn how to be brave, badass, and the boss of our own careers. Yes, I did just say badass. But first, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter at leadx.org. Each issue has actionable tips you can try right away to advance your career and to fulfill your potential. Visit leadx.org. Our guest today lives with her husband and two kids in New Jersey, and she's a master of the career pivot. She started as a press secretary on Capitol Hill, then pivoted to being a CNN contributor, pivoted to becoming a Dateline NBC producer, where she won an Emmy. She's also worked as a PR executive and editor-in-chief for Care.com. Her newest book is Fearless and Free, How Smart Women Pivot and Relaunch Their Careers. She is Wendy Sachs. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin.
Thanks for joining us. Now, we are going to talk about Fearless and Free in just a minute, but I want to hit you with a couple of questions that our listeners are always curious about. And the first is just, can you share a time in your career where you failed as a leader? And like, what did you learn from? What did you take away from it?
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually do write a whole chapter about failing in my book, because I do truly believe that the growth comes out of failure. I've failed many times leading teams, but also just personally on my own projects, my own passion projects. I was trying to do a documentary about sleepaway camp, something I was very passionate about. I'd raised a ton of money. I'd bought camera equipment. I was all ready to go shoot this documentary when I lost my funding literally a week before I was supposed to start a shoot. And I decided to go shoot it myself. And even though I'm not a camera person, I shot and I figured out how to do the audio. And I just read the books online and I shot this film. There's been so many different times in my life that I failed. And I actually attribute writing this book to all the failures that I've had in the past, because I don't think I would have had the confidence or the courage to write this book if I had not failed before. So I'm a true believer in sort of owning failure. I mean, no one wants to fail fabulously, but you want to be able to embrace it a bit so you can move on from it.
It's a good story, Wendy. And I, you know, when I read your book, you talked about failure time out of your control, where all of your footage literally burned up in your office, in an office fire. And when I read that, you probably think I'm a horrible person. I laughed, not because it was funny, but like at how crazy that was. Can you laugh about that now?
Oh my God, I completely can. That was like another passion project of mine. By the way, I'm a big fan of having a side gig and really believe that everyone should have a side gig, something that they are really, you know, whether it's a creative endeavor or a business endeavor or, I don't know, an academic or a musical endeavor, there's something sort of having that side hustle is so important, I think, to having a sense of sanity and balance and feeling like you're creative and you're growing all of the time. But that was an insane experience. I was working at Dateline NBC. I was an associate producer, and I'd actually asked permission. This is another sort of topic about women asking permission. I'd asked permission to do this side project where I was going down to Central America. We were going to Ecuador, and we were shooting what we wanted to be this like very cool MTV-like travel series, and I went with my college roommate. I actually took out a bank loan to afford this. And by the way, I was told by NBC executives I wasn't allowed to do this because it was in somehow conflict with Dateline NBC, which of course it was not at all competitive with them. So we hired a reporter to be the face of this project. We took out camera gear. We went to Ecuador. We shot the film. We come back. I'm editing the tapes. I go away on a ski trip and I get a phone call from my colleague who I shared an office with to say, Wendy, our office burned down. I said, what are you talking about? You know, 30 Rock didn't burn down. The Dateline NBC office is only my office behind a locked door, and every single tape was ruined. And I thought it was like the NBC gods raining down on me because I had violated their policy of having any sort of outside creative pursuits. I can laugh at it today. I actually keep a photo of our experience traveling to Ecuador with my college roommate. And it sits next to my bed as sort of a memory of, you know, being, I was in my 20s at the time and I was fearless and free and I really went after something and it didn't work out. But, you know, again, sort of, you know, rising from the ashes, I continue to try to have these creative passion projects on the side that I pursue. And like this other Sleepaway Camp documentary I had mentioned before, that blew up also, not in flames the way this travel documentary did. But what I've actually just realized over the years is so many women who I know may look at what I've done in my career and think that everything always works out so seamlessly for me. You know, I have another book coming out. Isn't that exciting? I've been on television. That sounds so glamorous. Yet what people don't realize, and I'm sure, Kevin, you've had this experience because you spend your time interviewing, you know, executives and CEOs and business people and business leaders all of the time. They don't understand all of this sort of blood, sweat, and tears that go in and all of the failures, all of the things that actually don't work out. They see the success and they might be envious of it or intimidated by that, but they don't really understand how many steps it took to get to where you are. And I think that's a really, really important lesson. Certainly something I try to teach my children, but something that all of us can benefit from is things don't always work out, but you sort of grow from all of the things that you attempt. And hopefully, you know, you'll get to that place where it all sort of makes sense.
Yeah, Wendy, so much good stuff, and what a crazy story. I'm glad you shared it. And so much good stuff, because just like you said, anybody who's achieved any amount of success will have just as many, if not more, failures, but you often don't hear about them. I mean, you see when they're on the cover of a magazine or they've achieved CEO status or whatever it is, and you don't look and notice all the things they did where they failed. And it's funny what time does, because Wendy, I was similar. My first business right out of college, you know, I had no money. I was literally sleeping under my desk and getting up and showering at the YMCA for a year, and it failed. I was getting ready to say it crashed and burned, but it didn't literally burn the way your project did. But I look back at that and I wouldn't change a thing. Like, some of my best memories is sleeping on this crazy floor, one little tiny office, you know, trying to hustle. And I also want to say, listeners, what Wendy said is so true. Like, it is great to have a side hustle or hustle or two, because, you know, if you're not getting everything you want out of the quote unquote day job, side hustles are a great way to learn new things, to challenge yourself, to have a little bit of extra income protection, and be a step perhaps towards a new career. So I'm glad you brought that out as well. And Wendy, you wrote a whole book about this, sort of, but like, what are your thoughts on work-life balance these days? Any tips on how to achieve it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's so much discussion over the past decade or so about work-life balance. I think what's really sort of encouraging right now is, as the millennials are coming up and starting to have children of their own, we hear a lot about that they feel so entitled and they, you know, have different demands on the workforce. And my generation, I'm a solid Gen Xer. And, you know, they're basically forcing companies to take another look at balance and what that means. And of course, there is no real balance. And you're not going to have a day when you're feeling like you're being an amazing employee and an amazing parent and an amazing spouse or partner or sister or brother or friend. You know, there's no real sense of balance, but there is a sense that you're not being pulled in one direction. So the other parts of your life are really being sacrificed. And so I think we are seeing some real change. I think that women need to take the guilt out of the equation, though. I think there's so much culturally put on women to feel like they need to be this extraordinary mother, this godlike mother. And all of that creates such anxiety and such angst, and you feel like you can never win. The cultural standards and expectations are just, they're just not practical. So I think when we start reframing what that paradigm looks like and what a good mother is and what a good employee is and what you need to be doing to be good at your job. And that's not necessarily about FaceTime or about how many hours you're clocking in, or frankly, about being available 24/7. Those are the things that need to change. So when we start reframing what an amazing employee looks like, we can start helping figure out what a more balanced work-life situation really is.
And listeners, you know, we talk a lot about leadership, obviously, on the LeadX show. And I think this is incumbent on great managers, great leaders, because it's relatively easy to manage, quote unquote, manage by just looking at, hey, who's in the office all day, who's in early, who's in late, who's responding quickly to my email. That has nothing to do, though, with getting results. And when you truly become a great leader, you'll realize it's all about results. It doesn't really matter how people are achieving them. And Wendy, your book is Fearless and Free. And right away in chapter one, you give some really specific advice. You say, change your words to boost your brand. What are you talking about in there?
Well, there's been an interesting thing that's happened over the past couple of years with realizing that this is sort of a trendy way, a linguistic trend, where women were constantly saying sorry, 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 apologizing, almost apologizing even for just taking up space. And this whole sort of sorry thing is a very much of a British sort of linguistics trend that was then picked up in the States. And Pantene did a really satirical commercial looking at the way that women apologize, apologizing when a man bumps into her, apologizing when a guy is taking up space on the subway, apologizing when what looks like her husband or partner is coming home from work and she's handing the baby over to him. It was a constant, you know, stream of sorries. Amy Schumer then did a very funny piece about sorry also, and it became, you know, this sort of outrageous parody on her show that then went viral. And it was, you know, why are women always apologizing? Why do we use what people would call these shrinker words that diminish our power? Putting in things like just and actually, like, I just want you to take a look at that, or actually, this is what I think. We're pulling our power out on these little small words because it's almost like we're trying to deflect coming across as too brash or too forward or frankly too bitchy. When I was looking at the language and then also looking at what was happening in our election and the way that Hillary was being scrutinized, you know, she's not smiling enough or she's too direct. It became this whole situation of realizing, you know, how do we as a culture look at women's power? And then how are women actually diminishing their own power by the way that they're presenting themselves? And so these two sort of situations collided. And I really want to make sure that women come out strong, come out bold. We can be well liked by not taking away our strength and the way that we're perceived. And as I was writing this, Kevin, you know, I was very much living this too. I went through this whole phase when I was really leaning into sorry a lot because I was told in a performance review that I came off too strong. I was too brash. I was too bitchy. And I was horrified by this. I mean, I never thought of myself as being mean or being bitchy. I felt that I always sort of presented with confidence, but then I wanted to dial it back a little bit because, of course, I wanted people to like me. And I started saying sorry all the time. And the irony was I was actually working at Gray Advertising, and Gray is the one who produces Pantene commercial. Immediately I dropped saying sorry. I mean, the sorry was working like a charm there, by the way. I realized I was dealing with all these hotshot guys and I kept saying like, hey, sorry, don't mean to interrupt, or sorry, as I walked into the room. Everything became sorry, even though I wasn't really apologizing for anything. I hadn't done anything wrong. It was just a social lubricant, basically. It was a way to sort of fill the space, to come off a little less edgy, a little less sharp. And it worked really well until I saw that ad and then realized, wow, I don't want to come across as apologizing all the time.
Yeah, this is a great point. And again, listeners, I'm a big believer in the power of words. And man, we could have a whole nother episode about what happened persuasion-wise with the presidential election for another time, I guess. And I would say just listen. Now that you heard what Wendy was talking about and using the sorry word and other, you know, diminishing words, softening words, have ears, you know, that hear it. Certainly try to hear it for yourself, but you'll also now start to hear it in others and realize what that's doing in the relationships in the room. And Wendy, regarding networking, building social capital, you know, you talk about the importance of engineering serendipity. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I love that expression. You know, I think most of us think of serendipity as a happy accident, right? It's just these like great things colliding and great things happen. And it's this fabulous accident, when actually there are companies that are really trying to engineer serendipity. They realize that great things happen during certain collisions of creative forces. And those forces can be, quote unquote, engineered. If you look at creative agencies or startup companies or tech companies like the Googles, Facebooks, and a lot of advertising agencies, where they're putting the beer garden in the office or the cafeteria or the water fountain, they're creating spaces where they know people are going to be able to connect and come together. And by creating this, engineering this serendipity, you're sort of putting forces into place that are going to allow for great positive results to happen. So when I'm turning it to ourselves, how do we create serendipity for ourselves? A lot of that is tied to how we put ourselves in opportunities and in places and, frankly, in the room where things are going to happen. We're putting ourselves out there so we can let great things occur. You know, when we look at these networking conferences, different networking events or places to go to, personally, I don't want to sort of put a whole stereotype on women in general, saying women don't network well or don't like to network or, you know, resist going to events, because I don't think that's actually true. But the most effective things that happen at events generally happen after the conference. So they're at the cocktail receptions. And those are the times when a lot of women, frankly, aren't there because maybe they have decided that it's more important, it's more valuable to go home than to be hanging out at a cocktail party. So how is it that we actually put ourselves into spaces and open our minds up to the possibilities and make sure that we're meeting the people that we need to be meeting and sharing with them what we're working on and keeping an open mind about how we can explore new opportunities for ourselves? There's a whole bunch of forces that come into play when we walk into a space with an open mind and think, how can I connect to that person in the corner who I know is working on a project that might be helpful to something that I want to be working on? Or I need to connect with this person over there because I want to learn from them, because they're doing something in the field that I'm trying to go into now. So it's creating opportunities for ourselves that then can sort of turn, you know, doors opening, doors opening, doors. It's a sort of this incredibly organic process, but one that can also be set into motion. And it's up to us to set that into motion.
Okay, so let me flip this around a little bit. So this isn't specifically from your book, but we're talking about pivots and relaunching careers. What's your advice to someone who is, I don't know, mid-30s, employed, and their current career is going great, but they just don't want to do it? Like, maybe I happen to know a lot of former lawyers, a lot of ex-attorneys, and well, I'll just use that as an example. If I'm a 35-year-old attorney and like, you know what, I really don't like the law, or at least not anymore, and I want to do something else. I want to go into advertising or whatever it is. How should I start to pivot when I'm already, you know, gainfully employed?
So, I mean, I really think that everything we need to know lives online these days. I mean, truly everything is a YouTube video or an online seminar that you can be taking that it's also opening up other sort of events and conferences and classes to do, whether it's online or to actually go to a concrete space. So I think here's where you can sort of engineer your own serendipity and open up a new opportunity for yourself. If you're that lawyer who says, I want to go into a creative field of advertising, there are so many different resources online to start exploring these new interests and then figure out what conferences are open to go to and find out how to network with the people who are in these fields and to start exploring that while you're not giving up your day job. I think it's easier than ever to really be able to transform our careers just because so much we can learn. We really can learn online now, and particularly in fields that are really emerging, from social media experts to a lot of the different sort of social and content-oriented lines of work these days. There aren't a lot of experts yet created there. You can actually become an expert relatively easy just by reading and following and seeing these videos of all the different ways to sort of learn and grow into these new fields. I would never say to someone completely give up your day job. I would tell them to just start exploring and start reaching out to the people within their networks or other people that they're connecting to online who are in the fields that they want to go into. Start going to those events that might be outside your comfort zone. Start meeting with the people who are not part of your networks. There's something that I write about the weak ties that are really the strongest ties of personal networks. And it's the people who are not your best friends or the people who are in your immediate network, but the people who are a friend of a friend. Those can often be the most effective resources to moving into a new career. People are generally open to helping someone out. And it's just about, honestly, it's about reaching out. It's about reaching out and making that first connection.
Wendy, I think you said something really smart here. So I think, you know, most people, if they're thinking about going into a whole new field, the natural thing is like, oh, I don't know anything about that field. I'm going to learn about it. And yes, you need to learn about it. But you really stressed the other part, which is networking with people in that field. I completely agree. You said, listen, you can really learn that stuff online fairly easily. You can actually become an expert fairly easily. You can read your way, listen to podcasts, whatever it is. But the more important part, and maybe the more challenging part, is just don't forget to go to those conferences and start meeting people in that field. It's a little trite, but they say, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And a little bit when it comes to career shifts, you do need to know the stuff, but that might be easier. Don't forget to also start meeting people along the way. So Wendy, before we wrap up, you know, we like to challenge our listeners every day to try something new, to become 1% better. What is an action you want to challenge our listeners? How can they be a little bit more fearless and free today?
You know, I think it's really looking at what you want to do next, looking at what you're afraid of, you know, taking the risk and trying to move forward. For some people, it's those small steps. Other people like to take big leaps, but most of us, I think, are somewhere in the middle. And, you know, figuring out what is it exactly that you want to be doing, whether it's you want to write a book, you want to write the Great American Screenplay, you want to launch a business for yourself, you want to, you know, become a pilot, whatever it may be that you really want to be doing, what's the first step that you can take today to actually make that happen? For some people, that might just be starting to rewrite their resume and really getting that done. For other people, it might be going online and, you know, downloading a new podcast or watching a video or becoming a little bit more fluent in the industry that they're trying to go into. For someone else, it might be signing up for that networking event and actually going to it. You know, it's those small steps that really lead to big steps that I think lead to change. And the more that you can put yourself out there and take a risk, the more confident you're going to become. Confidence really is something that can be grown and created. And I believe truly deeply that it's the root to all of this.
And confidence is so contagious. I mean, it will lead to great things. Wendy, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you, your company, your books?
You can find me at wendysachs.com. I'm also on Twitter at WSachs. And you can find my book on Amazon.
All right, friends, you've just been mentored by Wendy Sachs, an expert on career pivots and reinvention. Check out her books on Amazon or your favorite bookstore. You can get all the links mentioned and show notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And listeners, I got to ask you a favor. If you're getting your money's worth from this podcast, please just take a quick minute and leave a 1 or 2 sentence review over on iTunes. The more reviews a show gets, the more likely it is that iTunes will show it off to others. Until next time, remember, you don't need a title to be a leader. It's not about power or authority. Leadership is all about influence. How will you lead today?